My name is Maura Vidham. I am 12 years old. Today is November 26, 2017, and I'm speaking with Bernice Mann, who is my mother. We are recording this interview in Chicago, Illinois, and today I'm going to ask you some questions, okay? So, thank you for letting me do this interview. Can you tell me about someone who has had a big influence on your life?
I would say my father has had a big influence in my life. He came into my life when I was probably about 3 years old, so he's technically my stepfather. He was a person who worked hard, did not have much, did not have an education, but was a very honest, hardworking, caring, compassionate person. He didn't spend a lot of his time judging others. He taught me to value my education, to appreciate the things I have, and to work hard.
So is there any advice that he has given you that you would give me?
Yes.
Or has had an influence on you?
Definitely, Maura. There was a time when I finished college, and I did not know what to do with my life. But I felt that I had to be something. I had to have a profession to show my father that my college education was good and it paid off. And what happened was I applied to optometry school, and I sort of didn't do well on the interview. I didn't go to optometry school after the interview. And I was afraid to tell my father at first. And when I told my father that I would be working for another year after college before going back to graduate school, and he took it, as always, with complete acceptance and said, "Well, that's fine. Because at the end of your life, you will not be thinking or regretting that you could have worked for 34 years or 35 years instead of 34. So 1 year less of working at something was not going to be of any concern. And so whenever I am off track or delayed, offset in my goals, I think about what he said and how 1 year or even more probably won't make a difference at the end of my life. And I think that that's probably very true.
How would you describe yourself now? And then compare that to how you would describe yourself at my age.
Oh, wow. It's taken me a long time to learn about myself. And there are so many things, Maura, that I wish I could summarize well, that I wish I had known when I was your age. But that's just not how life works. So what are some of the things? Here are some things. One is everything that you think about yourself or about your life, your thoughts may not always be true. Even your thoughts are very real, but they may not be accurate or true. So, for example, it's really easy to be in your head and think that you're not good enough for something, or you shouldn't do something, or someone doesn't like you, or someone doesn't believe in you, or you don't believe in yourself, or something like that. And just because they're your thoughts and does not necessarily mean that you're that any of it is true.
So, speaking of, like, how you were when you were little. Do you think that I'm similar to you when you were little, and how so?
I see some similarities, and then there are some things that are not similar at all that I'm really thankful for, because I don't want you to be just like me at all. So I think you're hardworking. I think you're a caring and compassionate person. And I like to think that those are attributes that are from me or from your family. And but then I see courageousness at your age that I don't think I had. You're much better at taking risk and trying new things.
Really?
Being very honest with me at times. I think those are all good things. You're way more athletic than I'll ever be. I think certainly I think the fact that you take risks, try new things is very key and different.
So
and I love that about you.
I know we were talking about, like, you when you were younger. What was your childhood like? Like, I know that I go to Skinner, right? And you probably didn't have, like, the same elementary experiences as I'm having or have had. So, like, how would you compare mine to yours?
Oh, well, we both are public school educated.
Yeah.
So I went to all my public schools. And I went to my neighborhood public schools up until high school, I would say. I think that much of our, there are some similarities. I loved going to school, and I had very good attendance, and I think you do too. I was not probably, as they say, afforded the opportunities that you have.
Yeah.
You know, you're fortunate in that both your parents are educated and well educated, I would say. And so I think we are able to provide more assistance, more knowledge to helping you learn and to providing you with opportunities and enriching your life with our experience. I also sometimes think sometimes too much is not always necessary. I think since my childhood may be considered somewhat lacking in amenities and materials and money, sort of made me be a little bit more aware of you know, the things that I have, and I'm more inclined to, I think, you know what others may not have, that, you know, you fortunately view as, you know, part of your everyday world.
And I know that you've, like, tried your best to give us maybe some things that you weren't able to have when you were younger, yes. And I'm so thankful that you've done that, and so I hope that we're celebrating that this Thanksgiving.
Yes.
So, more specifically, like, talk about your moves. So, I know you were born in New York City, and you grew up in, New York City.
Yes.
But I know you've moved around a lot, so.
Oh. Well, yes. I spent most of my life in a very, very tiny apartment in Manhattan. In not such a great neighborhood. I grew up in Chinatown, and my parents and I and my sister lived in a 350 square foot apartment, which is like smaller than the first floor of our house. I never had a bedroom, and there were times when I didn't even have like my own bed. I had a sofa bed that we had to put away every morning. There was one table in the whole apartment that we ate on, that I did my homework on, and one bathroom that we all shared. And my parents were, you know, not around a lot. They worked a lot. And so I was home by myself a lot. We didn't go on vacations. We didn't do fun things on the weekends. We did not have a craft cabinet in the house.
Dang it.
there were definitely differences, and it's made me want to have things different for you guys, because I felt like some of those things I would have liked to have as a kid. I don't know if you really want them, but now I get to live it through you. So I now have the craft cabinet I never had when I was a kid.
So
my parents moved to Brooklyn just as I was sort of in between college and graduate school. And then so after that, I moved to California for graduate school.
You moved for college, right? Undergraduate.
Well, I left home for college. So I lived, you know, on campus or around campus. But I don't really consider that moving out.
Oh.
You know, because I'm at school. Yeah. I live at school. So then I came home for 2 years, and that's when I had to tell my father I didn't know what I was going to be yet. And then I moved to California for medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And then that started a lot of moving around.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of moving around involved with medical school and residency training and work after that.
Speaking of medical school,
yes.
I know that your parents were very musical, and they weren't very medical science-y.
No.
So, really inspired you to be a doctor? I don't really know the reason behind it, and I don't know where that.
Oh well, I can't say I've been inspired in any traditional sense. I did major in science and biology when I was in college because I really liked it.
Mm.
I liked it from the time of high school. I was very inspired by my science teacher in high school. I still remember her name. Electra Demas.
Whoa, that is a name.
I loved her class, and I loved learning. And so I decided I was going to major in biology because I liked it so much in high school. But, of course, I never even really thought about being a doctor. I didn't know any doctors. Nobody told me to be a doctor. Not on my radar at all. And which is why it took me so long to figure out things after college, because I didn't really have any direction.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think the way I wandered into medicine is more that I tried to apply to optometry school because my best friend.
Tell the whole story.
Huh? Tell. My best friend just got into optometry school in Manhattan. Her brother was in optometry school. So I said to my friend Connie, I was like, I think I can do that. I can go to optometry school. Let me apply. And I applied. I took the OATS, the optometry admission test, and I did fine on them. And so I got the interview, and I showed up. And being the unprepared person who just didn't have a clue, I sat at the table. I remember right in between two other optometrists who asked me, why was I applying to optometry school? And I just said, oh, well, I think I can do it. I didn't really know anything about being an optometrist. I had not thought about it very much. And I did not even realize how bad I was doing during the interview.
Oh, no.
And so I pretty much failed the interview.
Oh, God.
Following the interview, I was whisked off to the library. I did not realize what was really happening to me at the time. And basically, they put me in a room to show me a video about what optometrists did. And then afterwards, they sent me to a private practice on Fifth Avenue to also have the one-on-one experience of seeing what an optometrist does. And at the end of that, I went home and realized that I probably was not getting into optometry school at that point. And then it was arranged for me to meet with the dean of the optometry school after all these wonderful experiences. And he sat me down and said, you know, we can re-interview you now. And I thanked him for it, and I said, oh, thank you so much for the opportunity. I realized that I probably have not thought too hard enough about what it is that I really want to do. So I declined to be re-interviewed, and I said I was going to reapply next year if it felt right, and I thanked him. And he looked at me and he's like, you know, Bernice, has anyone ever told you that you could do anything you wanted to do? And I looked at him completely shocked, and I never heard that before, and I wasn't thinking about it. And I looked at him like, no. And then I went home and I was worried about how I was going to tell my dad. That was the first story I told you about.
Yeah.
And then I just said, I'm just going to work another year in this fruit fly lab. And I'll be okay, and I'll figure out what I want to do. And my dad said to take my time. Wasn't going to really make a big difference, he said. And then within that year, I talked to more people, and I thought about it, and then I decided to apply to medical school without really knowing a whole lot either about what doctors really do or what a doctor's life would be like. But that's how it happened. Yeah. I didn't get into optometry school.
Oh. So I know you mentioned the fruit fly lab.
Yes.
So tell me more about this
fruit fly lab. So right after college, I had to get a job. And there aren't that many jobs for people with a bachelor's degree in biology. So you end up, you know, being in transition. And I ended up getting a lab as a research assistant in a fruit fly lab that studied circadian rhythms. And I loved working there. I loved the people there. I liked the science. I was pretty happy. It's just not very easy to make a living with a research assistant's salary. So it's not like a career people can have, because it's just not, it doesn't, you can't survive on it. So I worked there for 2 years studying circadian rhythms, and just this year, 2017, they announced the Nobel Prize winners for medicine. And the principal investigator, the man I worked for back in 1988, won the Nobel Prize, which was pretty cool because
it's the same stuff you were studying.
It and I've published with this Nobel Prize winner, and I worked in his lab. And I think now that I'm a little bit more aware of how things happen, I think he had a role in me eventually going to medical school
and not becoming an optometrist.
And not becoming an optometrist. It was a great lab. And now I can also say that what seemed like inconsequential work, looking at little fruit flies and how when they sleep and when they're awake, is as important and worthy of a Nobel Prize, which is pretty cool.
So speaking of all your jobs, which job have you had that has had like the most influence and even like the smallest jobs? Really?
Well, that's a good question, Maura. I've had a lot of jobs.
You have?
Uh-huh. I've worked a lot in my life. One of the most heartwarming jobs I've ever done was a summer where I spent working with kids with cerebral palsy. I was sort of a teacher's assistant, and these were kids with significant physical disabilities, and I saw them every day get physical therapy and be in school. And it was just amazing, their enthusiasm, mm-hmm. their love, their willing to share, the hard work that they put in despite their disabilities. It was just always inspirational because I come from, I think, an environment where I thought things were lacking. And then I see these kids and, you know, it made me appreciate a lot of what I do have. Mm-hmm. And it was just fun. It was fun, but it was hard work and it was meaningful. And so finding meaning in your work sometimes can be way more rewarding than a big paycheck.
Yeah.
Going to work, feeling like you're contributing to people's lives, making things better, and having people appreciate it and express it is so rewarding. I think it's like that for your teachers probably, people that you've, you know, bumped into in your life where, you know, you really just appreciate that individual and what they do and how they do it.
Yeah.
It's priceless, right,
like,
love?
Or when I even see, like, a smile on my cousin's face when they just see the smallest thing happen, or, like, they have so much joy from sticker.
That's the thing about beautiful. Kids. It's that every small thing is pretty awesome.
It's so precious, too.
And it made me also, that was the experience that gave me a sense that I actually liked being with people or working mm-hmm. with people, I think. That experience gave me the confidence to do that. And then I think about the work I did at Cook County Hospital. I was there for a good number of years. It's the first place I went to work when we moved to Chicago. It was the only place I really wanted to work. And that's because, you know, that hospital's committed to taking care of everyone, whether they have health insurance or not.
Mm-hmm.
I get to work with very like-minded people who feel similarly. And so I really enjoy that work. I like being a doctor without really having to think about all those things.
Something that I really, really wanted to talk about was how the political climate that I have grown up in has maybe been a lot different than the political climate that you grew up in, and how that's going to influence my life, how it is influencing my life, and how it did influence your life.
Ooh. More, I have to be honest.
Yeah.
When I was your age, I did not know anything about politics.
Oh, okay.
I was not interested. I had my very, very narrowed perspective on the world. You know, my parents did not talk about politics, which was good and bad because I think that's my parents did not sit around talking about injustices in the society. They did not talk about racism. They didn't talk about any of those things, love. They just said, you know, wake up, work hard, go to school, and go to bed. And so my world
not the
was
worst advice.
Pretty simple. And stay safe, because it wasn't safe. There were a lot of gangs around when I was growing up. And so I was not savvy about politics. I did not know about feminism.
Yeah,
I did not know about any kind of all the things that you're so aware of now.
So would you have changed that? Would you have gone back and looked at that with, like, a bigger perspective?
I might have felt bolder to have a stronger voice. I'm not sure. You know, my parents were immigrants, and we lived in Chinatown, and so it was a pretty insulated community in a way, where everyone around me was pretty much in the same situation. Parents are immigrants. They worked in Chinatown. They lived in Chinatown. So it wasn't like I was starkly different from my peers. And I remember watching Brady Bunch when I was a kid. I loved watching Brady Bunch. And I thought it was so cool. They lived in this really huge house. They had, like, parents that, like, went on vacation and baked cookies. And I remember going up to Pawpaw, you know, my mom, and saying, hey, how come you never bake cookies, right? That's all I was asking. I wasn't even asking for the vacation. I wanted some of this home-baked cookies that they were talking about that I saw on the show. And she just said to me, you can't watch that show again.
Not brain. Okay.
Which, obviously, she didn't enforce, because I watch plenty of Brady Bunch. but that was, like, her response.
So, I see the cookies as a symbol.
The cookies? Like, all these things so, I do?
Or everything that you see as an ideal. Like, when you don't have something, and you see that as what you want.
Yeah.
And you see that as an ideal that, like, somebody says that you can't have.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, like, I think I see it as more of, you know, I didn't have these things in my childhood, so I'm hoping to provide them to my kids. Yes. And maybe it's a way of me having it to
I
them.
Love cookies.
Yeah. So, like, we bake cookies.
Yeah.
I make you go apple picking.
Yes.
Right. I dress you up for Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. My parents never did that. Stuff like that are pretty important to me.
I wanted to talk to you about the small businesses growing up. I know that you told me this story about your sneakers, or like how every year there would
I
be
get
like
one pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. Is that what you're talking about? Yeah. So every year before school started, Gung Gung would tell me that I could get one pair of shoes.
Mm-hmm.
They were usually sneakers, so I would wear those all year or try to make them last all year. We would usually get them on Canal Street, which is not as cool as it is now. Back then, it'd be like these five and dime stores. The shoes would be in this very large bin. Kind of like imagine how they keep watermelons in the bin. So the shoes would be in there. And then, so you would, and the shoes are all tied together, like the pairs. Like, there's not even a box. And you would go fishing for your size.
Nice.
And they'd be like $5. And I really, maybe that's why I have so many pairs of shoes now. I just thought of that. Oh my goodness. Because we were just talking about how I probably have way too more, like more shoes than I probably should have.
Yeah.
Considering everything else that I have. But that's how I would buy my shoes. And then I would wear that in the rain. There was no such thing as snow boots, rain boots, whatever shoes. There was that one pair every year.
Okay, so kind of concluding the interview, who do you want me to be?
Oh, I feel just the same way as Gung Gung would say to me. I want you to be happy and healthy. It's not about how much you make or what school you go to. It's about fulfilling your internal dreams, what makes you happy and satisfied in life, and I want you to be able to find that. I want you to be able to know what that is and to feel confident in pursuing it. I think it's hard because so much of what's defined as good or successful, it's not always aligned with what makes us happiest.
Yeah, a lot of times it's material wealth.
Yeah.
And that's not at all I see as happiness.
I mean, I look at Gung Gung and Pawpaw, and they did not live like kings and queens.
Yeah.
They live a pretty modest life. But there were times when I felt like they were content.
Yeah.
With how their lives have been and satisfied. And they're probably just about everyone else we know has more, I would say. But we have family. And that family connection is completely priceless. You can't buy that.
Yep. The family makes you it's richer than anything anybody could ever have.
Yeah. You can't buy that.
Nope. Can't buy that love.
Oh.
I love you, Mama.
I love you too, Maura.
Thank you for doing this with me.
Sure.
Thank you for asking me.